Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable. This morning we are going to discuss both what is old and what is new in computing and how the old can lead to the new and the new can lead to the old. Jesse will describe it in a minute. Jesse Feiler is an app developer, consultant, trainer, and author. His books include iOS 6 Foundations and the forthcoming SAMS Teach Yourself Objective-C second edition. His apps include Minutes Machine, the iPad-based app for managing meetings, agendas, and minutes, and Saranac River Trail app. He can be reached at northcountryconsulting.com. Also joining us, Brian Brayton, the network engineer for the city of Plattsburgh, where he has been for the last 6 years. Previous to that, he was the network administrator at Clinton Community College. He's been in the IT field for about 16 years, has a degree in computer science, and is a Microsoft-certified system engineer. His areas of expertise are in Windows servers and computer networking, which we'll get into in just a moment. Brian, thank you very much for joining us by phone. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
A great pleasure. And Jesse, always wonderful to see you. Thank you for coming in and making the trek. Always
good
to see
here.
You. You sent me a priceless note, which was question number one that I want you to ask me. What were we originally planning to talk about, followed up by what are we talking about now? It evolved.
It didn't evolve. Evolution is usually considered a long process. This, on the one hand, has been a long process, and on the other hand, it happened last Wednesday.
Okay. All right. So ultimately, we're looking at this idea of because we're always talking about what's new.
Yeah,
and in this regard, we can look at what's been around for a while.
Well, yeah, and I'm going to turn the technical side of this over to Brian in a moment, but I just want to mention that software, particularly operating systems, are really not as good as a head of lettuce. Because when a head of lettuce is no longer fit for use,
yeah,
it turns brown and mushy and stinks up the refrigerator.
And you got to get it out.
Yeah. Software doesn't give us that benefit. So what happened with XP, Brian?
Well, I mean, you know, it's been out 12 years now. I guess it was released in 2001. And it's, you know, it's what we call bit rot. After a while, things age, and certain software isn't maintained as well. It's easy to find vulnerabilities and exploits in, and not the least of which Microsoft would like you to spend money on something else. So
how do we get so married to it, Brian, in the sense of that we don't let it upgrade? I mean, we've gotten into this mindset, those of us who are Apple users, that whenever there's a new operating system, we download it, we get, we do this, we do that, we're all set, we're updating, we're talking about it, it's the talk of the town. So why is this allowed to linger and be around for so long and to use your word, allow it to rot?
Well, for one, it was, very, very successful, both on the consumer side and the business side. For two, it was, a change on the consumer side, it was very stable and people used it. And I think the combination of the two, the sheer popularity, at some point it was something like 90-some percent of the desktops out there, and the stability of it, I mean, everybody wrote programs and software for it, it just kind of combined. And so now you have this large proportion of the desktops that are running it, and people got used to it. It's probably more a matter of inertia than anything else. You run something for 10, 11 years, you tend to get used to it.
But there's another very, very big difference between the two business models of Microsoft and Apple.
Yes.
Microsoft makes money selling software.
Right.
Including Windows. Apple makes money selling hardware and services. Microsoft also sells services.
Yeah, and I think that's a valid point. Apple has always considered themselves more of a hardware company and Microsoft not, though you do try to see them get into that a little bit these days with, the Xbox and things like that. But yeah, they're primarily software.
So all the more reason why you would think they would gussy it up every year or so, right?
Well, and they've tried. Vista didn't do so well. Windows 7 did exceedingly well, and then, of course, along came Windows 8, which was Vista all over again.
Yep.
So, you know, they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. They want to get people to upgrade, but on the other end of that, their new software is selling very, very poorly, worse than Vista did, in fact. HP just, there was a big announcement yesterday, I guess, that HP started offering Windows 7 preloaded on most of their machines again, just because the Windows 8 versions weren't selling. So, they're trying to get people on something newer, but they really are having a rough time with it.
What do you think that says about us? And this question will be for both of you. We'll begin with Brian. But what do you think that says about us as computer users?
Well, I mean, it's not like it was a decade or even, so ago, where computer users were people that use them primarily as a tool to get business done. Now it's, they're more of the tool that people just want it to work. They want to, not have to learn how to use it. They want to be familiar with it and comfortable and just have it work. They don't want to have to relearn the thing every 2-3 years, and it's, that's a justifiable point. Again, it goes back to user inertia. You know it, and you want to keep it that way. And I'm the same way. Even though this is my chosen field of expertise, I really don't want to relearn how to run the thing every 2-3 years either.
You see, that's the difference, I would submit, between a hardware person and a software person, if I might be so bold.
Yes.
Because we do want to learn from scratch every 2 years. Because
it's not about learning, though. I mean,
and in fact, we want to change things every few years.
Well, yeah. Not necessarily for the good either, right?
Well, yeah. And the thing that has caused the confusion last week was the way what happened with the latest attempt to move people off of XP.
Yeah.
And Microsoft, I think 2 years ago, announced that support would no longer be provided after April 8th of this year.
Yeah, which that in of itself was like extension number 3, right?
Yes. And then last Wednesday, well, you can fill in the gaps, Brian.
Well, so what they did last week, and I think this is going to confuse a lot of people, is they said that they would extend security supports and updates for what they call their security products that run on Windows XP. For the consumer, this mostly means Microsoft Security Essentials, which is their anti-malware platform. On the business side, it means Forefront and the related products there. But all that means is they're going to update those products. They are not going to update anything to do with the OS itself. But if you read the headlines, it reads like it means that they're going to extend support for XP, and I think that's going to confuse a lot of people. It might provide a little bit of support for the business end that are still using those, which I think is vastly misplaced. It's not going to be a very effective stopgap at all, but that's a different discussion entirely.
So let me ask this question. How much of this is, we have a convenience store chain around here called Cumberland Farms, and everybody that I know of always referred to it as Cumbies. Everybody refers to it as Cumbies. Well, finally, Cumberland Farms got smart and said, you know what, in our marketing, we're going to just call it Cumbies. Come to Cumbies, and they embraced it. Is there a point where this is a marketing issue, where it is something where Microsoft, it may behoove them to market it in a different way of calling whatever new product is XP revised or something else, and kind of embrace the fact that it is something that people love and they're ultimately trying to help you love it even more?
But they can't just change the name, because there are differences in how the operating system is implemented.
Okay.
So it's not just a marketing thing, but I think marketing does come into it, because whenever people make changes to their environment, whether it's a new operating system, or changing the color of paint in your living room, when you make changes to the environment, there can be a ripple effect. And people are asked, and in fact, some of the follow-ups to last week's announcement were from some users who said, if I'm going to have to move off of XP, I don't want to move to Windows 8. I'm not sure I want to move to another Windows, and some certain number of people are going to be lost to the ecosystem because they're going to move to tablets, to other operating systems like Chrome OS, like the Mac. So whenever there is this kind of disruption, you know, it's sort of like musical chairs, and I think that's what the fear is.
Well, and that's absolutely true. If there were ever a time for a company or a person to move from Windows to, say, Mac OS or Linux or whatever you want to jump to, now's probably the time because, you know, with a big learning curve with the jump from, say, Windows XP to Windows 8, you might as well put it into something else if you want to make the jump. So that's a very valid point.
Or go to a tablet.
Well, I mean, right, absolutely, sure. If it'll handle, you know, everything you need it to do, sure.
What does this mean for the bottom line for Microsoft?
I can do the technical side. I can't do the I don't do that.
Well, I can speculate, and I can tell you, going by their sales, the numbers are not good. I'm assuming that they're losing a ton of money right now. They already have made the announcement that, I shouldn't say make the announcement, it's rumored that Windows 9 will be out very early 2015. They're already trying to distance themselves from the Windows 8 name. So they know, you know, very much it's been a failure, and they're looking to push past that already.
So, all right, so let's talk about that. This is what I don't understand. So the failure comes from it's not enough like XP, or that people just don't want to change. I mean, is it the product that they're selling, or is the problem that we're so mired in this other existence?
Both.
Yeah, I agree with Jesse on that. A little bit of that. I think the biggest thing is the interface. They tried to force what used to be called the Metro interface, the touch-based interface, on top of a typical desktop user, and it's just not the best environment for a desktop. And I think that actually threw a bunch of people off. It's actually pretty decent if you're using it with a touchscreen tablet or any type of touchscreen in general. But it's just too different for people to get used to. I've heard that some of the improvements being made in 9 are basically to bring it back to the desktop roots, not force that tile interface on people, and just let them sit at the desktop. So, you know, it really is more, I think, probably more about the differences, because truth be told, I think underneath most of the software still run on it, that kind of thing. And people just aren't used to it.
So, Brian, you are the network engineer for the city of Plattsburgh. How does this impact your life, your day-to-day work life?
Well, we still have, the city's got somewhere south of just about 300 PCs or so, and thankfully we've been seeing the writing on the wall for a while, and we've been pushing forward with a migration to Windows 7 for a few years, so we're actually only have probably 20-25 machines left that are running Windows XP, so we're in pretty good shape. There's a couple of legacy systems that actually are stuck on XP that we'll have to deal with, so we're seeing some headaches with that, but thankfully we're ahead of the curve for the most part. But we are moving to Windows 7, not Windows 8.
Mm.
So the training and the familiarity issues are somewhat mitigated by that. Who knows what will happen, you know, 6-7 years from now when we have to move off Windows 7. Maybe it'll be far worse then. I don't know. Let's hope not.
This sort of upheaval seems to happen about every 15 years in the personal computer world, because we started back in around 1980, 78 or 80, and about 15 years after that, some people were upgrading, some people were running very old software and very old computers. And in the late 90s, when the Y2K problem emerged as an issue, a lot of people and companies had to buy their way out of it and replace tens of thousands of computers. There was that big bump then,
yeah,
when we had a surge in sales, largely for that reason. And now what we're dealing with is, in 2000, we had really the two, I think, most successful operating systems launched at that time, what became OS X and Windows XP. And now some of the people who have this inertia, you know, it's 15 years later and it's time for another bump and moving to the next level. So I think it's probably going to be another 15 years. I'm hoping it's another 15 years. But it's interesting that both major platforms had the bump in with the Y2K issue and then in 2000 with the major new architectures.
Well, in that 2000, the Y2K, that was about the time that Microsoft was merging what was the legacy Windows 95, 98 code base and what it became Windows 2000 that then became Windows XP.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're basically, and that's really all Windows 7, Windows 8 are evolutions of what that NT code base used to be from way back from 1996. I think that, you know, it's basically the user interface that has changed for people, and they're not really happy about it.
Now, you mentioned legacy systems, and that brings up another interesting point that happened last week. It's a big article in Bloomberg Business Week. I have some numbers here.
Can I throw out
some numbers?
Oh, I love when you do.
I came with numbers. There are about 3 million ATMs in the world.
All right.
420,000 in the U.S. 95% of them run Windows XP.
Wow.
Talk about a legacy system.
Yeah, there are some mitigating facts behind that, and I don't know the numbers on it, but a lot of those ATMs run the embedded version of Windows XP. Not all. In fact, the NCR claims most of theirs run the full version of XP, but the ones that are running the embedded version do have security updates, I think, until 2016. Don't quote me on that, but the issue becomes that if NCR is saying most of theirs run the full version of XP, then, yeah, they still have a problem to deal with.
And maybe you know the answer. When I read this, I wondered, because an ATM is, it's a little computer running basic software, doing something very basic. Do you by any chance know if XP was powering the point-of-sale terminals at Target?
I have no idea.
I wouldn't be surprised. It's very, a point-of-sale terminal is very similar to an ATM.
Okay, right, because you're basically getting the same amount of, information, right?
Yeah, there are consequences from these embedded systems.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's sort of scary.
So I've always used this analogy, and so now I'm wondering about it, because when you bring up the issue of the ATM, my analogy slash joke slash stab in the heart is that I don't understand how you can be in Tunisia, you can go to an ATM, you can put in your card, and you can take out $20, and it will be brought. You know, your account will be brought up to speed in a nanosecond, and yet we can't figure out how to get people to accurately vote in this country.
Well, in one case, you're dealing with computers and networks. In the other case, you are dealing with people.
Okay. But the fact that we are able to do that on a quote-unquote legacy system and fairly accurately, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, those banks make sure it's accurate.
Right. They don't. Yeah. I mean, they're not going to screw around with the money. So the point is, so if you come up with a new system, what's the incentive to them to say, all right, now what do we do? You know, let's just change it.
Well, I mean, and that's exactly why they're not changing them as fast as they can.
Right.
They're, you know, they of course, they have to certify those things and make sure that they're as accurate and secure as possible. And I'm sure that's behind some of the slowdown on it. But the point is valid. If we can run our banking system on a networked machine like that, how come we can't develop a voting system like that?
Right. And have a way for people to, and not just voting, but to have a way that is as that is as stringent, you know.
Well, and we, for instance, with the ATMs, we know where the major vulnerability is. With the cards with the magnetic stripe, and most of the rest of the world does not use the magnetic stripe. They use embedded chips. But it all comes down to a matter of dollars and cents. We are willing to, or the financial institutions in that case, are willing to live with security compromises, because refunding fraudulent charges is presumably less expensive than tightening the security. I like to come here once a month and bring you good news.
Yes, yes. Get us thinking at least, yes.
I'm absolutely certain that that sort of calculation, the return on the investment calculation, came into play. The same thing happens with automakers and recall
sure.
lawsuits. Sure. At some point, you know, they will have to move forward. The question is when, I guess.
It's a fascinating topic. Do you have articles up?
Yes.
You can find out more by going to northcountryconsulting.com. Jesse does a great job of putting up articles and things. You can read more about this at northcountryconsulting.com. You can also go through our email, our website, which is wamc.org/roundtable. wamc.org/roundtable. Jesse Filer provides consulting services to small businesses and nonprofits through North Country Consulting. Brian Brayton is the network engineer for the city of Plattsburgh, New York. Brian, thank you very much for joining us by phone. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it, too. Thanks for having me.
And, Jesse, it's always a pleasure to have you here. Thank you very much. Talk to you next month.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.